Okay, we are being recorded. I will go ahead and call to order this hearing of March 10th, 2022 in the matter of the appeal of Z0528-21-RSCA. My name is Joe Turner. I'm the county's hearings officer. I'll start with some brief announcements and a summary of the process that will follow so everyone understands how you can participate in the hearing today. I start by saying I am not a county employee. I am licensed as an attorney and trained as a planner. I serve under contract to the Board of Commissioners. I say that so you know you're getting a somewhat independent review of the application and appeal before me today. My role as the hearings officer is to conduct public hearings and make decisions about certain land use matters in Clackamas County. In making those decisions, I am required to apply the county's existing laws. I am not a policymaker. I don't have the authority to vary from or change the laws. If you think that the laws need to be changed, you can work with the Board of Commissioners and Planning Commission to do that. But state law requires that this application be judged based on the laws in effect when the application was filed. As a hearings officer, I'm to provide an unbiased decision maker, and I believe I am unbiased with regard to this application. I have not had any pre-hearing contact with any of the parties regarding the substance of the application, and I don't have any interest in the subject property or any of the surrounding properties. But you have the right to challenge my impartiality and argue that I'm biased in one way or another. And you can do that when it's your opportunity to testify. The procedure will follow. I'll start by asking staff to summarize their staff report, copies of which are available on the county's website. Or actually, it's the county's decision and then response to the appeal in this case. Then the applicant will have an opportunity to present their proposal, respond to the staff report and the appeal. Then if anybody else wants to testify in support of the application, they may do so. And then we'll go to the appellant, allow them an opportunity to present their appeal and objections to the decision. And anybody else who wants to testify in opposition or with questions or concerns. So that should cover everybody that wants to say something about this application. You fall into one of those categories. Once everyone has had an initial opportunity to testify, I will give staff and the applicant only an opportunity to respond to the testimony that was offered. If their responses include any new evidence, I will give everyone a chance to respond to the new evidence. Otherwise, I'll close the public portion of the hearing and announce what I'm going to do. Anyone with an interest in this application may offer relevant oral or written testimony. But testimony should be relevant to the applicable approval criteria, which are set out in the staff decision. However, it's important that all parties make their best case to me. My decisions are final for purposes of the county, but may be appealed to the Land Use Board of Appeals, or LUBA. However, LUBA generally will not allow new testimony and evidence on appeal. They'll decide any appeal based on the record before me. So if you feel it's important that myself or any future decision maker knows something about this application, you need to make sure it gets into the record before me. In order to preserve your right to appeal, you or someone expressly representing you must testify orally or in writing before the close of the record. And in order to raise an issue on appeal, someone must have raised that issue before me. If the applicant wants to object to any conditions of approval on constitutional grounds, they must raise those issues before me as well. And any issues must be raised with enough specificity that people can understand what the issue is. If you feel you need more time to prepare, you can ask me to hold the record open or to continue the hearing. If I hold the record open, you'll have an opportunity to submit additional written testimony and evidence before I make a decision. If I continue the hearing, we can come back and do this again at a later date. But whether or not the hearing is continued or the record is held open for any other purpose, state law requires that I hold the record open for an additional week for the applicant to submit a final written argument without any new evidence. The applicant can waive that right if they choose. But if anybody wants me to hold the record open for a longer period or to submit new evidence or for any other reason or continue the hearing, you must make that request before the close of the hearing today. Also, my decisions have to comply with state law that requires that I issue a final written decision within 150 days after the application was filed, which in this case is April 18th. So there's some limit to how long I can continue the hearing or hold the record open. When you testify, please begin by stating your name. Please spell your last name so I get it right. And if you represent someone else, please say so. Also, please give us your full mailing address so we make sure you get a copy of my decision when it's issued. As I noted, testimony must be relevant to the applicable approval criteria. Please don't repeat testimony offered by yourself or earlier witnesses. It's not necessary to repeat testimony. I take good notes and can review the recording of the hearing if I missed anything. And I think that concludes my introduction. Mr. Blessing, I think we'll do a summary of the technical issues, how you can raise your hand, et cetera. I'll let him do that. But that concludes my introduction.
Okay, thank you. Clackamas County is abiding by social distancing requirements during the coronavirus pandemic. So this public hearing will be conducted virtually using the Zoom platform. Panelists for today's hearing, which include the hearings officer, county staff, and the applicant, have both audio and visual and video capability. Audience members who have joined the meeting will have their mics muted unless they wish to testify, in which case they will be called upon to do so by the county staff moderator. Audience members' video will not be turned on at any time. Today's hearing is being recorded as required by law. The county will make every effort to post the recording on the county website later today. There is a designated time during the hearing when it will be open for testimony. The hearings officer will make it clear when this is. If you want to provide testimony, you will utilize the raise hand feature. Attendees on PC and iPad, you have a raise hand button on the Zoom bar. It's either the top or bottom, depending on device. When the moderator switches you over to provide testimony, your screen will look different for a little while. Primarily, you will see all participants' cameras, not just the one who is speaking. Staff will call upon you when it is time for you to provide testimony. Be sure to provide your name and mailing address when you begin. Once you have provided your testimony, your mic will be muted and your screen will be returned to normal. If the record is left open at the end of this hearing and you wish to submit additional written testimony, email written testimony to bblessing@clackamas.us or mail it to Clackamas County Planning and Zoning Division, 150 Beaver Creek Road, Oregon City, Oregon, 97045. The staff contact email address is also available on the webpage where you found the Zoom link for today's hearing. Testimony must be received by 4 p.m. on the day the record closes. People who testify and provide their mailing address will receive a copy of the hearings officer written decision. If you do not wish to testify but you would like to receive the decision, you must provide your email or standard mailing address by email to the staff contact for the application or by entering it in the Zoom chat function during the hearing. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Blessing, you want to go ahead and summarize this your presentation?
Yep. Just a second here. Okay. Thanks again. My name is Ben Blessing, Clackamas County Planning and Zoning staff. This is a brief staff presentation of the planning director's decision for file Z0528-21-RSCA for a stream conservation area setback exception application that was filed. This is a quick look at the vicinity, just for orientation. Colton, which is an unincorporated rural community on the highway here, and then the subject property being just north of Milk Creek. This is a aerial view zoomed in at dad. You can see Milk Creek flows roughly along the property line, the southern property line of the subject property. You can see the existing dwelling here and vegetation, and some of the areas where this would be where the drain field is and so on and so forth. This is a site plan The applicant's site plan basically is trying to show that the proposed addition of the new of the single family residential addition or expansion to the manufactured home is essentially not getting any closer to the creek. The stream conservation area in this case has 100-foot setback or buffer, commonly called a buffer. Exceptions are permitted in certain cases where there's development that predates stream conservation area rules, and as long as it doesn't encroach closer to the creek. So some highlights, roughly 0.7 acre parcel does have an existing dwelling manufactured home, as can be shown in several photos. Again, stream conservation area prohibits development within 100 feet unless there is a valid setback exception, which the decision found there was. There just to note too, there was some other development on site, primarily a historic dwelling that detached accessory dwelling kind of towards the southwest corner of the property that also predates any kind of zoning ordinance based on photos and based on the applicant site plan. It's pretty early 20th century and apparently associated with an old mill site that was adjacent to this part of a creek. Finally, a condition will be required, among other conditions, to make sure that the construction of the single family residential addition doesn't encroach closer to the creek. So the appellant did have concerns. Exhibit 9 lists several of those. Staff didn't have sufficient time to go over all of those, but staff did make that exhibit available to the hearings officer. And just generally, the filing requirements, per the appellant, some concerns were the filing requirements were insufficient. There wasn't a sufficient restoration plan with the development and the proposed home site location is closer than existing development generally. In response to those, I just to note that the planning staff did deem the application complete, finding there was sufficient information to do so. As far as vegetation removal and so forth, there is a condition that's standard with the Section 704 that a certain maintenance of the that native vegetation be maintained to 75%, which is still conditioned in the requirement. And then finally, staff visited, this is an Exhibit 6 in a memo to the hearings officer. Staff summarized a site visit held on February 17th, I believe. And that was at the request of the applicant. And also just to note, the appellant also requested a site visit early on. So at the site visit, staff just kind of roughly looked at the measurements and found that there doesn't appear to be any closer encroachment to the creek. It appeared that the applicant may have measured too far closer to the river, which is noted in my memo to the hearings officer, but the measurements didn't show that the building corners where the proposed new building will be didn't appear to be closer than the existing manufactured home, and certainly not closer to the existing structure, the attached accessory historic structure. With that, you know, the also just to reiterate, conditions are in place to ensure that that doesn't happen with either a survey or some kind of other documentation showing that there is no additional encroachment into the creek. That concludes my presentation.
Okay.
Thank you.
I just had a couple of questions. Let's see. Exhibit 9 or page 38 of – no, wait. That is page 38 of Exhibit 9. The appellant submitted a copy of the house plans, the floor plans. And given the angles, see if I can – I can't really show anything, but
I could if you want me. Do you want me to share that screen?
Sure, if you can pull that up, that would be great. But he shows that the addition appears to be about 10 feet further south than the corner of the existing mobile motor manufactured dwelling.
Sorry, I'm trying to.
If that north arrow is correct.
So are you just that, looking for? Okay.
Yeah, I understand. It's the building is still away further from the creek than the historic building, but I wonder if you could address this.
Well, sure. You know, on the one hand, it's the mean high water line is not a precise measurement from, mm-hmm. you know, we don't have a recorded mean high water line, but basically in looking at, I mean, this does show that it could possibly be an encroachment closer to the river, but it also looks like the river may meander further south away from the actual manufactured home. So it's, in other words, that 10-foot offset kind of assumes that the river's completely parallel. And I didn't find that to be the case necessarily. It looked like it kind of meandered further to the south, and the staff kind of went along and measured this point. This point, if you can see it with my cursor, mm-hmm. it's about 65.
That's the southeast corner of the manufactured one. Yeah,
exactly. About 65 feet roughly. Then staff measured this point and kind of measuring the same rough area of the where the approximate mean high water line is, about 70 feet, 65 to 70 feet. So even though, you know, the parallel line does show that it could possibly encroach closer, I don't know that that is completely consistent. If you're looking at a straight line, yes, that may be, but it didn't, based on those measurements, I it didn't show that it was closer. It's just that the creek's kind of maybe meandering slightly away with the land, and that might be why the home site's being angled like that. But that's what I found.
Okay. And then the historic structure is further south than that.
Yes. In fact,
closer to the creek.
Could I share a photo if that's all right with that?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. I believe that it was part of a larger mill site, but it mm-hmm. pretty much is on top of just a few feet from the edge of bank. Give me one sec here. And you can see that.
So that to the left of that older building in the background there is the stream.
Yes, precisely. Yep. And roughly where the railroad or where these kind of telephone pole mm-hmm. rounds are, just beyond that is the top of slope basically. It breaks away, starts breaking down considerably towards the actual stream, the creek and stream bed from there. And that structure, just scroll down. There's another photo. I mean, it seems pretty old. So it does have an older vintage. I mean, the tax assessor records could verify it, but based on visual observations and the anecdotes around the mill site and other, you know, the construction, the vintage of the construction, it appears to be well predate the stream conservation area pretty clearly, I think.
Okay. What exhibit number was that first photo?
Exhibit number 6.
Thanks. Are both of those exhibits? Yeah, it looks like it.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Page 3 Great. And 4. Yeah.
So I can track it when if I need to. Oh, the size. In the decision, it lists the site size as 0.99 acres, I believe. And then you said it's 0.68. What's the basis for the change?
I'm not 100% sure on that. I could probably find out if I have to, because usually a thought on the matter. I don't know this for sure, but sometimes you have a listed acreage from the county tax office, which mm-hmm. is based on older approximate methods, and those can vary from the actual GIS calculation, which is generally more precise.
Okay. Yeah, I looked at the county maps, and that lists .99 as far as the assessor's maps, but I don't think it makes a huge difference as far as the size of the site, because the issue is whether it's proximity to the river, not the size of the site. I just wanted to clarify what the basis for the change was. Thank you, Mr. Blessing. Those are the only questions I had.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. and Mrs. Hendrickson, it's the applicant's opportunity to testify.
I just wanted to throw just a little bit more.
Hey, Mr. Hendrickson, can you give us your name first just so we know who's speaking?
Oh, I'm sorry. Ray Hendrickson. My address is 29600 Holt Road, Colt Morgan, 97017.
Okay.
And I wanted to just help clarify where the new structure was going. It's in line with the front side of that log cabin. You know, just to give you a better picture.
When you say the front, the side opposite the stream?
Yes.
Okay.
So if you look straight down that log cabin, that is where the back wall of my proposed structure is going to be.
Okay.
Just so you guys can picture that a little better if it helps you in any of your decision making. Besides that, I don't know that there's anything else I really have to say.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hendrickson. Is there anybody else who'd like to say anything in support of this application? If so, please raise your hand with the virtual hand. And I'm not seeing anybody. So, Mr. Stringfield, you're the appellant. It's your opportunity. I don't see him on my screen anymore.
It appears that we lost Mr. Stringfield.
Okay. We'll hang out a minute and let him hopefully come back. One of the drawbacks to these online hearings that are great for attendance, but we run into technology issues. Hopefully they realize we've lost them. And they should be able to just call back, use the same link and come back in. Okay.
Here we go.
Hi, guys.
Okay, Mr. Stringfield, are you back? I'm not hearing you yet, so you may be muted.
Are you there?
There we go. Now we can hear you. Thank you.
Okay.
Can you go ahead and state your name and address, Mr. Stringfield?
Yes, sir. My name is Rick Stringfield. My address is P.O. Box 70, Bolton 97017.
Thank you, sir. Now is your opportunity to respond, to present your appeal and respond to the staff's response.
Okay, well, my first question, Mr. Turner, did you get that envelope that I dropped off at the county yesterday?
Probably. I didn't get an envelope. I got an email with a scanned document, but it's 84 pages and reasons the application should be denied is kind of the title of the first page. Mr. Blessing, is that what he's referring to?
That's what was received by our front counter planning staff.
Yes, I did get it. It is dated yesterday. So, yes, I did, Mr. Stringfield, and I did get a chance to review it.
Okay, do you have it? Is it on your computer screen, or do you have?
I have it pulled up on another screen, so I have it right in front of me. If you want to refer to a specific page, I can scroll to it easily.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'm not here to disenfranchise myself from the Hendricksons. I like Ricky and I like Sydney. But I'm here to discuss the merits of this application. Anyway, what the Hendricksons are proposing is adding 4 bedrooms, 3.5 baths, a kitchen, a wet bar, a laundry room to an existing 3-bedroom, 2-bath house. They're adding over 3,000 square feet to a 1,200 square foot house. And I'm all for improvements. And I'm also here to protect the environment. And I have a little background in that. I'll give you a little background. I'll try and be brief. But anyway, when I was a young man, my first job was setting chokers in the logging camp in the Oregon Coast Range. save my money, and I put myself through college and received a degree in forest industries management. After I got my college degree, I was hired as a forester in a logging camp up the Molalla River. One of my assignments was being the environmental forester. I took a job as a forester, not a choker setter, after I got my college degree. And that was back in the early 70s, and that was when the Oregon Forest Practices Act that had been enacted was in its infancy. And anyway, I was the liaison for the company between the Oregon Department of Forestry and also the U.S. Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management, because we logged on our private timber land, and we also logged federal government sales. I lived in the logging camp up the Molalla River for 4 years and saved my money and bought my place here in Colton, Oregon, which I thought was one of the most beautiful locations in the county. It was a nice wooded location, trees on both sides of the creek, the die-for view of a waterfall. I bought this place. Basically, it was the first house I looked at when I went out with a realtor, knowing that I wanted to get out of the logging camp. It was a beautiful location, 2.5 acres. But the house was built in 1938 and was pretty run down, but the roof didn't leak and the toilets flushed.
Okay. Mr. Stringfield, can we? Hey. I appreciate the history, but what's the issues I'd like to focus on? Is what I'd like to focus on.
Okay, well, I've summarized that, but I just want to give you a little background. I've had my own business since 1984. I'm an advisor to the forest products industry. Back in the late 70s, I was appointed a Clackamas County Planning Commissioner by Joe Scocco, Ralph Groner, and Robert Shoemaker. So I've been involved with working with buffer strips, and playing by the rules. So anyway, with that said, I summarized for you the reasons Z0528 should be denied. Number one, the application was incomplete. The applicant did not provide all the required information.
Mm-hmm.
Are you reading along?
I am.
This county did not require all the necessary information outlined in ZDO 704 and the application forms. And then number three, the county staff did not review and evaluate the application in reference to the purpose of ZDO 704 and its specific setbacks and submittal requirements. And I can go through the specifics, and that's why I have all these exhibits. But my first exhibit A shows the property prior to the Hendrickson holiday acquired the property.
Is that the 1997 photo?
Yeah, there's a 1997 photo. You see the house with the red roof? That's
yep.
Not me.
Okay, you're the brown, gray roof next to the left?
Yeah.
Okay.
And anyway, and you also see the stream. The stream is running mm-hmm. basically due west, straight
okay.
due west. It takes a little curve to the right, but it's basically running straight due west.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second photo is a blurry one. The third photo shows the view out of my window.
That blurry one, are we looking south then?
You're looking due north.
Okay, so is that your house again?
That's my house again, a little bit
okay.
different angle.
Yeah, I'm just trying to orient myself. And then we're looking through the window at the stream, that's, I assume, out of your house.
And you're basically looking east, and the Hendrickson's property is to the left of that.
And the one
and
in the window?
Showing, yeah.
Okay.
You see the waterfall?
Yep, yep.
And then, okay, and then you see the trees.
Mm-hmm.
To the left, and then their manufactured home is beyond those trees.
Okay.
And that was taken in 2001. Next tree shows us up on the roof putting in cupolas. But you're looking basically due north, and okay. you see all the foliage along the creek bank. And then this was a picture of they had a family reunion, and there's a picture looking due north, and you see the foliage along the creek. And the last photo was taken on October 15th. Again, we're looking basically due north across the creek, and I know the date specific because that was my mother's 80th birthday. Okay, the next set of photos is to be Exhibit B, or recent photos I took in 2021. And this is looking due north across the creek, and you can see the vehicles in the manufactured home. And anyway, that foliage isn't there anymore. That foliage is not there anymore. There's a whole series of pictures taken mm-hmm. from about the same view. So that vegetation has been removed since the Hendricksons. And I'm not accusing the Hendricksons of this, but he bought the property from his cousin. This stuff disappeared prior to Mr. Hendrickson and Sydney moving in. So I want to make that perfectly clear.
Okay.
Okay, the next exhibit is Exhibit C. And this is ZDO 704. And in 704, purpose, preserving scenic quality, preserving and maintaining integrity of streams, enhance fish and wildlife habitat. You know, these buffer strips are called riparian zones, and there's a reason for them. You know, the vegetation, the root systems, they provide a filter for water leaching into the stream. Do you want me to get this technical?
That's the purpose of these, the river and stream standards. But those purpose statements are implemented. The purpose statements aren't approval criteria generally. That's what the courts have held. So unless the purpose statement says you must do this or you must consider this, those purpose statements are implemented through the approval criteria. So the issue is whether it complies with the approval criteria adopted by the board. The purpose statements kind of give some guidance if there's if the language of the code needs to be interpreted. But if the language of the code is clear, the purpose statements aren't an approval criteria.
Okay. But my understanding is when the county staff reviews the application, they need to notice the purpose of the ZDO 704. But anyway, moving on. Okay. Then on page 2 of it, see, we've got the
70403B.
Yeah, and then 70404A, the size and design of the proposed structures. All these things they have to consider when they're reviewing the application. And one of the visual impacts of any structures. That's on page 3 of C. And then we get into 70405 on A3 of ZDO 704, encroach into the setback more than the existing structures.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the southernmost corner of the manufactured home, and then you look at where the stream is, and they're coming down that plane of their east wall 15 feet to the heading to the southwest. 15 more feet, which equates to an encroachment of 10 feet closer to the creek. You start at that corner, you look at the creek, and then you plot out where that structure is going to be, and you wind up 10 feet closer.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so that's that. Then getting back to ZDO 704, you get on to 704.08. the submittal requirements. We've got A, the vegetation, locations of proposed development, et cetera. He's not cutting any trees. You have to have the exterior materials, the type and colors, et cetera, a cross-section of any within there. Obviously, they're going to have to dig a foundation, and so you need to have a cross-section of that. And I would have thought they would add a stream buffer restoration plan to perhaps mask the structure of their building and provide more shade for the stream to keep the stream cool for the fish migrations. And by the way, there are anadromous fish in there besides the trout. You know, there's a fall run of coho salmon, and you also have steelhead running up that creek.
Okay. Again, the submittal requirements, the courts have said that, give me a second. I've got it printed out in front of me. So the submittal requirements aren't approval criteria. So failure to submit something doesn't warrant denial. This is what the courts have held. If they fail to submit something that's necessary to prove compliance with the approval criteria, that is. But if, for instance, the exterior materials, size and type and color of siding and roofing, there is no standard that relates to that. So the fact that they didn't provide that doesn't prevent them from, doesn't preclude approval of, because there's no approval criteria that relates to this color of the siding and the roofing. The restoration plan, although providing additional vegetation would help the stream, if they're not removing any vegetation, there's no need for a restoration plan. If they were removing vegetation, they would need to provide that. But according to the Mr. Blessing's testimony, they're not doing that. They're taking out existing cleared areas already. So the fact that they didn't provide everything that's listed here is not a basis for denial of the application.
I'm with you. Okay, so let's go to Exhibit D, the application. Mm-hmm. And as you noted, on the front page, it should be 0.68 acres. I've got that county assessor's tax maps that say 6.8, but whatever it is, it is.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, it is. So anyway, getting to the application. So we went through page one. Okay, and then getting over to page three, the staff deemed the application was complete on the 17th of November, and the deadline for their decision was April the 18th. Okay. Yeah, on page something a little bit out. Okay, on page five, in addition to the home structure without getting closer to the stream, hey, the way I do my math and know north from south, he's getting 10 feet closer. Okay.
Mr. Stringfield, staff said, if you know, staff responded that, but the question I have is the historic building. Sorry, that's the word I was trying to come up with. The historic building is located much closer to the stream. So even if you're correct that the addition is 10 feet closer than the existing manufactured home, staff concluded that it's still further away than the historic building. Do you have any evidence
that historic building has nothing to do with this application?
It's existing development on the site.
The ZDO says you don't get any closer from the existing structure, and he's making an addition to an existing structure, not to the old log cabin.
Okay. So your argument is that the addition can't be any closer to the stream than the existing structures that you're adding onto.
That's correct. Okay. And that's what the county said in their decision, that it can't get closer than that southern corner. And then they're extending out further southwest another 15 feet, which results in the structure that they're adding being 10 feet closer.
Okay.
I mean, it's semantic, but that's the way I read it. So.
No, I understand. I just want to make sure I understand that I'm understanding your argument correctly. And I'm just trying to find the decision. I'm trying to find the code requirements. Oops, I'm in the conditions of approval. Give me just a second. I want to make sure we're all literally on the same page here.
Let me get back.
So I'm looking at 70405A, setback exceptions. The following uses are exempt from setbacks. Repairs, additions, alterations, or replacement of structures, roadways, driveways, or other development, which is located closer to the river or stream than permitted by the setback requirements, provided the setback does not encroach into the setback any more than the existing structures, roadways, driveways, or other development. So let me look at that again. That's just so everybody knows what I'm talking about. That's section 70405A2. And Mr. Stringfield, if I'm correct, you're arguing that the language that it says repairs, additions, et cetera, of structures no closer than the existing structure, roadway, et cetera. So your argument is it's referring to the structure you're adding onto. It doesn't allow for new structures.
Otherwise, he would have put that in line with the south face of the log cabin.
Yeah. Okay.
Kind of have me confused here, because as I go through my exhibits, I don't keep them in order. So.
Yeah, I understand. That's why I wanted to make sure we had the language in front of us and we're all referring to the same language. Okay. I'll consider that argument.
Yeah. So that's the way I read it.
Okay.
Okay. So we're still on Exhibit C or Exhibit D, the application.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me flip through here. Where we really got into not providing the necessary information was on the turn in all of the following, the site plan.
Are you in the application materials? Or
yes.
Yeah, here we go. I'm with you. Page 9.
I'm flipping through here.
It's labeled page 9. Yep, me too. Okay, I'm with you.
It is page 9.
Yep.
The plan must be accurate and drawn to scale. All existing and proposed. Okay, so you're under site plan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he left off where the steep slopes are, which are right at the edge of the bank. That would be the south portion of their property. He didn't have the property lines in correctly. It was not drawn to scale. It didn't show the parking areas that are to the south of the proposed addition. And that parking area was put in 2002 by Ricky's cousin, Michael Holliday. That was well within the RSCA, but he was a young man. His grandfather bought him the property when he was 19 years old, and they took possession in 2002. And I hadn't even met them yet. They just moved in, but then they start excavating to put in that parking lot right up to the edge of the stream bank where the slopes goes down to the creek. and they're bulldozing dirt over the bank. I hear all this noise and corruption. I go over and I introduce myself. Apparently it was Michael's uncle. I want to talk to the owner, and he said, well, the owner's this 19-year-old boy that his grandfather had just bought the property for him. And I introduced myself. I had a copy of ZDO 704. He said, hey, you know, you're looking at doing things within a RSCA, and that's not allowed. You need to have approval.
Okay, and Mr. Stringfield, this is something that happened before. It's not part of this proposal, so it's not something I can consider.
Okay, I'm just giving you some history.
Yeah, so, and I've read through your history. I appreciate it. I understand what happened. It's unfortunate, but it's not something I get to address in this proceeding.
I'm just giving you, but that's how that parking lot got in there.
Right.
And it was on the site plan.
So I don't think I don't need to consider the existing parking as being legal. The issue I'm going to consider is whether the existing building, the historic building, the log building, is where we have to measure the exception from. You know, if they have to be no closer to than that building or no closer than the existing manufactured dwelling, whether it's within the parking area or not, I'm not going to consider. I don't think that's relevant because there's no evidence it was legally created, or there's assertions that it wasn't. So
we're not questioning that.
Yeah.
I'm just pointing to all the things that he didn't turn in on his site plan, parking.
I understand. But again, the issue is whether the site plan that he did turn in is sufficient to demonstrate compliance with the approval criteria.
Okay. Well, one of the main issues I have with the site plan, and when Ben Blessing was out here on the 17th, and I was not notified from Ben that he was coming. He was lucky that I was here. But as we looked at on the site, I was concerned about the power line easement because my power, the distribution line, crosses the Hendrickson's property. Mm-hmm. And I feel for Ricky because PGE, they didn't handle his situation too well. But anyway, that's history. But as a result of it, the distribution line that feeds the pole to the south across the creek was put in underground. It's in a conduit underground, mm-hmm. and it crosses Ricky's property from the north to the south side. It's in underground. And when I was over there, I asked Ricky, you know, I know that power line just went into the conduit. Do you know where it is? You know? And he said, well, I'm not going to be impacting that. Well, I look at the site plan. It doesn't even show that power line easement through there. And plus, Ricky doesn't source his power from that distribution line. His power comes in overhead from a transformer on a power pole on Holt Road. It's the real question. And of course, and then he went underground also toward his manufactured home. Mm-hmm. But his line is his responsibility, but that power that's coming across in a conduit crossing from north to south is my concern. And sure. I didn't see it on the site plan. And I called PGE and I said, I would like to have a copy of that easement so I know for sure that we aren't going to be covering it up and making it inaccessible. Plus, when they came underground with the distribution line, they put a new pole on the south side of Ricky and Sydney's property. And they came out of the conduit and then up the pole and then across the creek to distribute power to my property.
Okay, so the power across the creek is overhead?
Across the creek, it's overhead, but it crosses
now I understand.
The conduit.
Right.
It is.
It's an underground so across the property, and then it goes up in the air across the creek and over to your place. Got it.
That's correct.
Okay.
So I called PG&E. I said, I'd like to have a copy of that easement. And that is exhibit.
That's the last page, I think. Last few pages of yours.
Number 10 or J is the easement. It just has a legal description where the Hendricksons granted an easement to PGE, but there's no drawing.
Mm-hmm.
They just have an easement to go across there, but they don't have it. And normally easements are meets and bounds, degrees and bearings and distances. There's nothing there. The last exhibit there is K. I mean, I couldn't believe that.
that's not good as far on PGE's behalf.
And then the other question we have, if he puts this addition in there, what happens if you have to access that power pole on the south side of their property that takes the power up to the top of the pole and across the creek and over to the south side of the creek?
Mm-hmm.
And by pushing that addition in, we got a technical problem because I have somebody calling in. They go away. And I hate to touch that screen because I cut myself off. But anyway.
Yeah. No, we're hearing you just fine. So I think if you just ignore the ringing, we can keep going.
Can you hear that beeping?
No.
Okay. Well, that's good.
We just hear
you. So then that last... the construction drawing. This is when they started putting in a pole. This is back in June of 2020. And what the heck are they doing? All this noise and commotion. And the irony is PGE never notified me there was going to be a change of the distribution line to serve my property. But anyway, PGE is over there, and they'd hired a contractor to dig a hole through all the river rock to avoid having the power line over Ricky and Sydney's addition.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I said, well, what's that all about? So they were going to put this power pole in further to the west toward Holt Road, and then come across the creek diagonally across my place.
Okay, Mr. Stringfield, let me stop you first. Mr. Stringfield, I have a question. There's I guess you'd call it a site plan that shows Holt Road, existing building, a new home. Is that the one you're referring to? I don't think it has a page number.
Are you on?
It's the second to last page of your submittal.
Okay, a construction drawing.
Yeah, probably. It doesn't really have a label. There's a stamp on it that is PL6 remove 40-foot CL4 pole, if that helps you.
Yeah, let me get down to that. Okay.
Yeah, let me know when you get there. I just want to orient myself.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The second page shows the new home, and the other one shows the existing building.
Okay.
And it's funny how this.
Okay. Before we go on, that first one, first drawing that has a stamp on the bottom, that's PL-6 remove. Do you see that?
Are you in K?
Probably.
Exhibit K?
Probably.
And what?
That's
one has PG.
It's the second to last page of your submittal. And it's a site plan.
Yeah.
And there's a stamp on the bottom to the right of the page. It's PL6 remove. It says on that stamp. I'm just saying this so we know we're looking at the same page.
In the right hand corner, it says D43-331.
Yep. Okay. That's on that one, which way's north?
Straight up.
Holt Road is to the north.
Holt Road basically runs due north, and on their site plan, they had north misoriented.
Okay.
North is straight.
So where's the stream on this? I don't think this shows the stream. Can you tell me roughly where the stream is?
It's right on the bottom of it. Well, the stream is on there. You see where the existing building is, new home?
Uh-huh.
I think that's the stream running.
Oh, that faint line there?
Yeah, okay. Faint line.
Okay. Okay, now I'm with you. That helps. You see thank how you.
The new home and the addition is kind of running off to the northwest. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's what they made their drawing from. But anyway, you can see that the they were going to put a new power pole in, and the see where it says new home, and you got that line running north-south. So they're going to, that dashed line to the left, they were going to place a new pole and then run diagonally. And this drawing is not exact. It was more right next to the existing log cabin.
Okay. But what that existing building, is that the log cabin?
I believe it's the log cabin. I'm sure it is. And who knows if that, these are exactly oriented.
No, I understand. I'm just trying to, again, trying to orient.
This is what the foreman gave me. He said, what the heck is going on here?
But if that's Mr. Stringfield, I'm sorry, but that's why I'm confused. Is in this plan, that existing building is north of the new home.
And no, it's west. North is straight up on that drawing.
Right. Oh, okay. Mine's sideways because it got scanned that way. That's why I'm confused.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why it would have been. But anyway,
so Holt Road is to the left on your drawing.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. So my drawing is sideways when it got scanned. That's why I was confused. Now I'm turned. Now that's why I wanted to orient myself, because I wasn't seeing where things were. Okay, thank you, Mr. Tringfield. Now I have one more question. There's a faint dotted line that's below. It says 160 feet, number two, something. Is that?
Yeah.
Understanding that that's the underground conduit?
No. This was the working drawing that they brought out as a surprise to me when they were digging the hole for the new power line. So mm-hmm. It wouldn't be running over the cross of the roof of Ricky right. and Sydney's home.
Uh-huh.
And they weren't placing that pole exactly per, this is a work foreman's drawing. And he showed right. me, he says, well, what are we doing here? Oh, well, we're going to put a new pole here, and then we're going to go to the run it across the creek. And it was all going to be overhead. It was all going to be overhead.
Okay.
And then we're going to go across the creek and run diagonally across your property. Well, the existing easement was such that the lines went basically north-south. This way, mm-hmm. they're putting, hanging a power line over my property without mm-hmm. an easement.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you might as well cease and desist right now, because you do not have an easement to run power over my property.
I understand. But what did they do then?
So they stopped.
Okay.
So they stopped. And that delayed Ricky tremendously. And I know he wasn't a happy camper about it.
Sure.
And I don't blame him.
Okay, Ms. Stringfield, so I'm trying to figure out where the power is now, where it actually is, where this pole is.
We don't know. You see, at that dotted okay. line, you see 824-825-49723, and that dark line that's
yep.
running. And it's
right across the new
across,
home?
Right across the new home. That power, now, where you start up above there, under 1994, and
yep.
then there's a pole, and it dots off to the west and then to the south. And
yep.
then to the southeast down to the bottom,
mm-hmm.
that's the distribution line. That's the distribution line that's serving the neighbor and myself.
Okay.
PGE said, okay, we will put that power, that distribution line underground.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. And I'm not sure if Ricky had excavated the trench for the conduit and the new distribution line. You'd have to ask Ricky on that. But anyway, so what they did is they trenched from that north pole and trenched and put a new pole opposite the creek on the south side. And they brought that conduit up and then put a line up to the top of the pole and continue to the distribution line across. Question is, where is that underground distribution line? And what I got from the PGE, I also got a copy from the recorder's office. There's no legal way to determine, unless Ricky, talking to PGE, they said, well, we've got an easement. We don't know exactly where it is, but we have an easement. I said, see, you got an easement. Be nice to know where that distribution line is so that when you're doing excavating or digging holes.
Sure. I'm assuming they can find it with technology, metal detectors or other detection equipment, because it's generally before. Go ahead.
Yeah. They look on page one of K1, call 811 and they'll come out and locate it. They need to come out and locate it. Then PGE send a surveyor out and put it on a document so it can be.
Sure. That would be a great idea. I totally agree. I can't make them do it. I have no authority over PGE.
I know you can't make them do it, but that's why the application, the site plan was incomplete.
Okay.
But that's my point.
Okay.
I'm sorry it got so complicated, but
it's all right. I just was confused by the drawings because mine were sideways. I think that's where I went south. But now I'm oriented. Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. And the problem is we don't know where the underground power is and where that easement is. And it should have been included on the site plan. Okay.
Absolutely. It should have been included on the site plan. And that's why the application was incomplete.
Yep. I understand.
And I think I summarized that on that why this application should not be approved.
Okay.
I've got papers. I got papers scattered here. Okay. So I think that kind of covers the application. Give me a second here to regroup. Okay, we got 2C. We got the application. I think we got 2 applications. BE. I need a bigger table.
Can't help you.
And I'm not too I'm in my 70s. I'm not real oriented to today's technology and virtual hearings, but I'm learning.
Doing fine.
Okay. Much stuff scattered here. Okay. Let's see. What was the last one? We went over to the decision. We went to application. So we got to go to decision. Okay, another point I was making, and I hate to split hairs, but on E1, it's over 3,000 square foot addition. When the engineer, and I believe his name was John Andrew Stember, he didn't add in that little triangle that's the extension 15 feet to the south.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean, between the two buildings.
It's pretty close. And I'm not hung up. Is it 82 feet or 78 feet? That's not that critical. But anyway, decision. Okay, material not submitted with application. We already covered those, so let's not rehash that. And we won't rehash the southernmost corner that was on page. Yeah, I also included in here, because when I went in and discussed things with the Ben Blessing, he had taken some aerial photographs, and he did some population measurements. But that also shows the orientation of the manufactured home. On page 4, the site plan, I know it isn't accurate. The north is not facing the right way.
Okay.
And I also noticed on, you know, on Ricky's application, man, that was an application. It's like 125 pages, a lot of the calculations on it. But I know it's not accurate because it drew the drain field, and I got a copy of the drain field and from the county, and it doesn't match up with what they drew on there. And like mm-hmm. I say, they left the easements, et cetera, et cetera. So the site plan wasn't quite what I had hoped. And I also note that when I got the application for the RSCA, I immediately called Ricky and wanted to talk to him about it. I got that on February the 9th. I called him on the 20th. He was going to come over the following Sunday. However, I left the gate open, stayed home, and anyway, they weren't able to make it.
Okay.
And then subsequent to that, I got a hold of the county, and I talked to Steve Hanschke. And anyway, he gave me a lot of information. And I was in contact with him, and he was going to come out and discuss things and get me oriented what was going on. And I was hoping that Ricky was going to do the same thing. But anyway, then I continued talking to him in emails, et cetera, through the 27th of December. And knowing he had a 150-day window to make his decision, so after December, he knew who I was, and I never heard from him. He never went out. And then on January 31st, the decision was made, and I said, well, how could that happen? He was going to come out and get the lay of land. Mm-hmm. And let me interject there, too, because when I was a planning commissioner, and we had, I think the meetings were every 2 weeks. Okay. And then in the middle of I'd have these applications for variances and get the report from the county planning staff, because I'd have to make a decision on it as a planning commissioner. Mm-hmm. Something looked like you need more information. I'd get in my car and on the weekends go visit those sites to see on the ground.
Yeah, I understand that you're objecting to the staff not visiting the site. I understand that concern, but they have visited since and supplemented their decision. So I will consider that evidence. Yeah. The fact that they didn't do so beforehand, they think that, you know, doesn't matter.
This a lot of this could have been prevented.
Yeah.
A lot of this
I understand, but we're here now. And we've got the record we have.
I'm just giving you some perspective. That's all.
I understand, but okay. I have to make my decision on what I've got before me, not what should have been done.
Absolutely. So anyway, so we're on Exhibit E, and I guess that's the essence of it. The thing that really, and on page 9 of the decision, shall not encroach any closer than the existing home site. That's page 7 of 12. It's E9 of my exhibit. Better keep that with these. So anyway, so that kind of takes care of that one. And F, that just has the picture of the real estate listing, and it says mm-hmm. 0.60 acres and 3 bedrooms and 2 baths. Mm-hmm. And that's for, and one of the things I'm concerned about is that when you're adding bedrooms, you have to have the additional septic capacity to.
Right. They'll have to do that through the building permit process.
That's right. And that I also know that If you have more than five bedrooms, it's a 1,500-gallon septic tank.
Yeah, that's something they'll have to deal with through the building approval.
That's right. Okay, so that gets through. And there's the G. G is the existing septic and disposal system inspection report. Just noting that the site plan was not accurate. Mm-hmm. Okay, then we get to H. This is just for informational purposes, but anyway, Ricky's cousin back in.
Yeah, and the alleged violation is not something I can consider in this proceeding because it's.
I know, I'm just giving you the background, but the interesting.
But
part,
I understand, but the background isn't something I can consider, sir.
Okay.
It's not relevant to the application before me.
I know. But it gives you some perspective. Anyway, and then here's where I've given young Michael the copy of the ZDO 704. Mm-hmm. So I think that gets through all the exhibits because J was the easement and K was the construction drawing. So I think we've hashed through all my concerns here. And then I won't be redundant because I think we've covered all this, but I gave you the reasons this application should be returned, updated, get the complete information on it, and then be reviewed again. But what was submitted, I don't think should have been approved. It should have been denied, and it should have been sent back to Ricky to say, hey,
I understand.
We need to have all the information so we can make a prudent decision.
Yep, I understand.
That's my position on it. And I appreciate you giving me the time to point out my outlook on life.
You're welcome, Mr. Stringfield. Is there anybody else who'd like? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. I'm not here create a war. I just want to make sure we play by the rules and I'm protected and the environment is protected and we can all live happily ever after.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Stringfield. Is there anybody else who'd like to say something about this application? If so, please raise your hand. I'm not seeing any raised hands. Okay. Mr. Blessing, any response from county staff?
I don't have much. I think you covered it. The main responses, I think you covered. Regarding the site visit, yes, the applicant informed me. The applicant asked me to come to the site just to help and verify everything, which was great. There's no requirement in the ZDO for me to coordinate a neighborhood-wide review, but it turned out that he was there, and that was great, too. The submittal requirements, I think you went over them. I don't need to go into that. And then, the power pole, we have exceptions too in the ZDO for power poles as well. It's ZDO section 704.05 subsection 4. If there's some future need to do that, then, just for the record, we do have an exception for utilities such as electric poles. But that's all I have.
The concern, my understanding was the concern was the building, the addition may go across the existing underground power line.
Right. And if that's already existing, then if there's no crossing of the stream, then you can strike that. It's not relevant. But
shouldn't they be able to locate that power line to make sure they're not putting a building over the top of it?
Yeah. And I think, like you said, it'll, absolutely, they'll have to do a locate using whatever technology.
Should there be a condition to that effect, or will the building permit process cover that?
That process would be covered in the building permit and the utility permit. It could be a utility permit as well. That they have a utility permit review through the engineering division that looks at all that.
Okay. Just finishing my note here. Not too far back. Let me find my note. What about Mr. Stringfield's argument that the no closer than existing development standard applies to whatever you're adding on to, not to whatever's there? So that they're adding on to the existing manufactured dwelling, so you can't be closer than that building.
That is an interesting perspective. I understand that's a good point. If you look at the setback exception, repairs, additions, alterations to or replacement of structures, roadways, driveways, or other development, which is located closer to a river stream, so blah, 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 provided that such development does not encroach into the setback any more than the existing structures, plural, roadway, driveways, or other development. So I guess if you look at it from his perspective, then it would really, the condition of approval could verify, I mean, I guess a survey could ultimately verify exactly where it needs to go. I mean, you got that house, you got the southeast corner, and then you need to have an offset survey come out there and set those points as close as they can go. That would be one look. But then again, you know, you have the other structure. I mean, I don't want to say exactly how
you have an opinion on how the code.
It seems like it would be, I think it should be that it should be structures plural and existing development. Okay. So,
okay. And then 70404A, I've got to pull that up real quick. Stringfield had an argument about that. And I just need the language in front of me. Okay, 70404A says shall be a minimum 100 feet and can be increased up to 150 based on the size, design of the structure, visual impact.
Not applicable.
It's not applicable? How come?
Structure shall be located a minimum of 100 feet of the mean high water line of a principal river. This is not a principal
river. Oh, okay. So 70404A is just principal rivers.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. Yep. That helps. And just so everybody knows, I'm just writing that in my note. That's why we're pausing. Okay. I think that was the end of my questions, but let me check. Yes. Thank you. Mr. Blessing, Mr. Hendrickson, anything you want to add?
Could you please just run through those questions again? Because I think I might have a little bit of.
Sure. The last one we just talked about was 70404A. And Mr. Blessing clarified that that only applies to principal rivers. So that isn't an issue anymore.
Right.
The one before was. I'm sorry, what?
The one before with the measurements from the creek?
Okay, yes. Mr. Stringfield's argument is that let me get to the code language again so we're on the same page. Just a second. Oops, went too far. That back exemption. Okay, 70405A2 says repairs, additions, alterations to or replacement of structures, roadways, driveways, or other development, which is located closer to a river or stream than permitted by the setback requirements. I'm summarizing somewhat. Doesn't encroach into the setback more than the existing structures. Mr. Stringfield's argument is that provision says your addition to a structure can't be closer than the structure you're adding to. The other interpretation is that addition can't be closer than any existing structures on the site, or structures or improvements that are listed there.
And I just wanted to let you know, even the way it's drawn right now, we did it to the mean high water line with tape measure with Mr. Blessing and put stakes at where I couldn't approach on. And we're still within those bounds.
Okay.
Build is so, a part of the structure that I'm adding on is actually 5 foot farther on the shot on the end where it is closer to my log cabin. We're actually moved farther away than I need to be.
Okay.
And we put stakes in there, me and Mr. Blessing, and he had one more guy with him helping. But So no matter what, the other building, this building, we didn't improve closer anyways.
Okay.
And then the electrical line. This was all done. I mean, the reason why I paid thousands of dollars and had the pole moved and fought and the years, you know, I won't get into it. Mm-hmm. The years of dealing with this and moving the pole because of the guy and all this stuff was to build this. Already had this plan, and we designed the electrical around this plan specifically. That's why I spent all the money and did this, because the reality of what it was before was that there was a power pole right next to my manufactured home, and all the lines were running above ground, and I couldn't build the structure under the power lines. That's why I paid all the money and took care of it and did the conduit and did this.
Okay, so that conduit's outside the footprint of your proposed addition.
And that's why we designed it the way we did.
Okay.
And then any other, I mean, get into affecting, you know, I'm not here to point blame, but I'm not affecting the river and the streams and the fish. You know, I mean, this guy goes out with chainsaws and cuts the logs out.
Okay. What other people are doing isn't before me. It's I understand that you want to respond, but it's not something I'm going to consider. So I don't want to get into that issue.
So is there any other issues that you think you need answers for that I could address?
No, but you have the right to have me hold the record open so you can submit a final written argument. You can address these in more detail with more argument without any new evidence. If you want to do that, I'm required to hold the record open for a week for you to do that. But if you want to, you can waive that and I can close the record today. So it's up to you whether you want to submit an argument or not.
I don't feel I have anything I need to argue and waste.
Okay. Then I'm going to close the hearing and close the record. There were a number of issues raised, so I'm going to take this under advisement. It means I'm going to consider all of these issues and address them in my written decision. Generally, I think this can be approved subject to conditions, but I want to make sure that I'm reading the code. I'm addressing all of the issues that have been raised, so I'm not going to make a ruling today. As I noted, the purpose statement is not an approval criteria. The application requirements are not approval criteria. So the fact that the application didn't include some of the specific items that are listed doesn't warrant denial of the application. It's the issue is whether what you did submit is sufficient to demonstrate compliance with the approval criteria. The structure location is the primary issue. I just want to, I understand Mr. Hendrickson's argument that the addition is no closer than the existing manufactured dwelling, and in which case this issue is kind of moot. But I want to look at that issue, and I think it's necessary to rule on that just so we have a clear definition of whether the addition can't be closer than the existing buildings, any buildings on the site, or it can't be closer than the manufactured dwelling that's there, so that I can clarify the condition as far as what is required there, how you demonstrate that. So that's what I'm going to do. I will issue my written decision within about 2 weeks from today. I'll send that to the county. The county will send it to parties record, which is anybody who's testified orally or in writing, and the applicant, of course. But that concludes our hearing for today. Thank you all, and have a good afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.